Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Purdy Insurance. Visit Purdy Insurance on Market Street in Sunbury or visit online at purdyinsurance.com. Your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Great to have you with us on this Monday. Brought to you by our good friends at Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. They will take care of all of your insurance needs. Very important. Obviously, yesterday was a huge event at the Jordan Center. I thought Penn State wrestled well. I thought Penn State was the better conditioned team, especially by the what you saw in the last 75 seconds of each third period. I'd say an 8 of the 10. I would say that Evans at 190 pounds, I'm wondering exactly how he's undefeated. I mean, he was backing up so much, I thought at one point he was beeping. I thought that Penn State creating action, being the better conditioned team, I think for the most part they got off to good starts. They have to do a better job of cleaning up in the middle. Garrett Hammond's his performance was outstanding. Brown was outstanding. Morgan McIntosh, Jimmy Gulabon. In the end, they did not give up any majors, but also they didn't create any majors either. All were three-point wins throughout every bout.
I think that's the thing that stood out to me in this match was the fact that the score was 18-12.
Yeah, I mean, there were no majors. It's like, so, there was a lot of emotion in there. There were also, again, the same thing that happens. Lots of moments where nothing happened. So it was a combination of a lot of things. I thought Penn State wrestled really well. Penn State was the better conditioned team and the better action team over the final 75 seconds of each of, I'd say, 8 out of the 10 bouts. If I'm Tom Brands, that's the part that concerns me. I'm walking out and saying, okay, we won, but. Something tells me he'd be a little uncomfortable as to how he walked out of there yesterday. They weren't dominant in anything they did yesterday.
From what you were seeing, 133, the Gulabon Clark match, was that the big win that Penn State needed to try and get this match and just couldn't follow up with another one?
Well, they got Hammonds.
Hammond, I forgot about Hammonds over Moore at 165.
165 beat the 7th ranked wrestler in the country. But they couldn't get anything else. I mean, Lawson at heavyweight. I mean, he literally did nothing yesterday. In fact, I'm not quite sure what he was doing. So,
boy, that Evans and Brown matchup, I did not see it, but I heard about it 175. Boy, talk about a tight one. I mean, the number two, number three guy battling it out to a 2-0 match?
I think you've got to be somebody who's a real aficionado that knows all the subtleties of the sport to appreciate it. If you're somebody that looks at it and goes, okay, I mean, that was 7 minutes of a lot of nothing. I give Brown a lot of credit because I think Brown did everything he could with what he had to work with. And Matt's really good. Evans did nothing. There's just no way on the planet you're going to tell me. I mean, it was exciting for Penn State fans because he won. But the reality is that for 7 minutes, you're like, okay, all right, that's number two, number three. That's number two, number three. That's two, okay. I'm all right. Okay.
You were expecting more, is what you're saying.
Well, no, there's no takedowns in it.
I know it was scoreless after the first.
Yeah, I mean, nothing. like I said, there's certain things you appreciate it, but in terms of an action match that would draw you to this, after they announced it was number two against number three, that was the last exciting thing that happened to draw an average viewer to the TV set.
Well, the person I was talking to is an avid wrestling fan, so I could.
Oh yeah, I understand. Oh, it had to be saying. Great. And the final score 2-0. Oh man, okay, no, okay, you can be into it all you want, okay. Be realistic. Okay.
Hey, listen, I've seen soccer games with lower scores.
I can tell you right now, 6-6 after 10 minutes of basketball wasn't exciting either. All right. Then finally the scoring picked up there. So really, if I'm going to sit there and be honest about the sport I announce, you can be honest about what you're watching. That had nothing. I mean, nothing. What made Hammonds exciting is how he finished. He got a big pickup, big throw, big excitement. How Gulabon finished. Wow. I mean, now that's got some juice that makes the sport you want to watch. Show me more. Brown and Evans, show me less. I'm thrilled for Brown. Matt needed that. Great. Matt's an excellent wrestler. People forget that in 13, Matt was in the national championship. You know, wrestled for the whole thing. And, you know, that was a huge win for him. But in terms of your ability to be, hey, show me more of that. No, don't show me more of that.
I didn't see it, so I'm not arguing with you.
I mean, at one point, Evans was beeping because he kept going backwards.
Well, that's where the referee has to do something about that then.
No,
was he engaged at least?
This is where you're way off, Kevin. Way off.
Well, no, I'm asking, was he engaged?
That was an extremely well officiated pool meet yesterday.
Well, I didn't see it.
That guy was on top of it, into it, talking to the guys, you know, getting things rolling. I'm just saying, Evans did. I mean, in other words, I sat there and watched, and I might have done more.
Okay, I'm just saying, I didn't see it, so when you say he's backing up, I just think that maybe...
He just didn't... All right. Oh, it was hand ties. I mean, again, Brown won it, and he deserved to win it. He was the better guy. In terms of drawing people to the TV set and say, show me more of that, it would have accomplished none of those goals. Hammond's throwing the guy late, that accomplished a goal. Gulabon, what he did late, that accomplished a goal. Show me more of that.
Well, now, Hammond's was back points late, wasn't it?
Gulabon got back
or
points
Gulabon.
Late.
Okay, Gulabon got the back points late. All right. Yeah.
So, I mean, that was terrific. So, that was great. Scintillating to watch. You get Zane Rutherford and you get Nico Megalutis in there, and now you've got Penn State winning six of them, and they get six, and Iowa gets four.
You know, this is
instead of the other way around.
This is as much a question for Byers as it is for you. But what kind of difference do they make in this team all year long if they're in the lineup?
What kind of difference they make?
I mean, are those two guys together a guaranteed six or?
Well, yeah, I mean, I would think that I would think on most nights, Rutherford and Megalutis are going to win. Are they going to win national championships? Megalutis has had trouble in the depth of his weight class of getting over the hump. He still has to do that. Rutherford, of course, hasn't done it either. You know, but he's only had one shot at it. He's got three more shots at it, which will be... See him coming back next year as a redshirt sophomore. What he's got. The difference that has allowed Penn State to win four is you cannot begin to put a price on what the bonus points of David Taylor and Ed Ruth meant. I mean, the number of pins that the two of them got in the tournament or Tech Falls, they're just giving you bonus points and bonus points. Bonus points. And I'll be frank with you, it takes the pressure off the rest of the lineup. It really does. Now you're expected to produce bonus points. I am. So, I mean, they need to get bonus points out of Brown. They need to get bonus points out of McIntosh. Not yesterday. I mean, yesterday is going to be kind of hard to come by. I mean, but that's when they need to get bonus points. But, I mean, it's between a dual meet team and a tournament team.
That's a good point. That's a very good point.
You know, there's a big difference between the two. That's why it's really odd how you wrestle all season one way and then you determine the national championship another way.
Well, and I think that's why high school kind of changed the way they did that by having the team tournament, because you're right, it is two different ways.
Yeah. So,
I mean, it's an awkward time of year to have a state championship over the weekend, this past weekend in wrestling, but because it's right in the middle of the, you know, well, it's right at the end of the dual meet season, but because of where individuals come in, it's mm-hmm. hard to find another place yeah. for it. But I agree with yeah. you. I hadn't really thought about it that way, but that, yeah, it's a different type of wrestling when you're team wrestling as opposed to individual to try and find a state champ or a national champ in this case.
Right. I mean, wrestling's a different kind of sport anyway. It really is an individual sport, where you try to do something at a team contest. It's not like basketball, where basketball, you know, one of the drawbacks is when you play one-on-one. I mean, we're about to talk about Dean Smith in the next half hour, the single most significant story of the weekend, with Dick Girardi. Well, Dean Smith won with team basketball. College football, I mean, football is the ultimate team sport. You need 11 guys working together. College basketball at its highest level is 5 guys working together at both ends of the floor. Not one-on-one, not mano-a-mano. Wrestling's an individual sport. It really is individuals. Yeah, you cobble it together and turn it into some team of whatever. But you're not working together to do anything. You're just trying to, you know, you're trying to win your deal, which then in turn does help the team. How about that?
You've seen an awful lot more college wrestling than I have. Is there a lot of, do college coaches juggle the lineup a little bit to get better matchups the way they, in high school, it's done a lot, but is that done a lot in college, or is everybody pretty much set where they are?
Well, you're pretty much set where you are. You know, it depends on what happened in the wrestling room during the course of the week as to who may have had a better week or whatever, but that's your lineup. I mean, Megalud is going to go out and wrestle every time at 125. Rutherford is going to wrestle every time. 141, Taylor at 165. Ruth, you know, once you lock yourself in, you're locked in. You know, the spots that you may juggle a little bit are the spots that you're not sure of as a coach. It's like changing your starting center. All right, the other guy isn't playing that great. I need to make a change.
Well, like I said, level, the juggling happens quite a bit. At least I've seen it that way. I feel it seems that way.
All right. The single most significant story is the passing of Dean Smith. We're going to have David Paulson at 4:06 today. We'll have Dick Girardi coming up next, the Hall of Fame basketball writer of the Philadelphia Daily News and my broadcast partner for Penn State basketball, to talk about the career of Dean Smith. That's next half hour. Here on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury, on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
The year was 1915. Thomas Edison was lighting up the countryside. Abigail Geisinger was starting a local hospital. Henry Ford was building the Model T. And J.O. Mertz founded the Sunbury Motor Company.
100 years later, Sunbury Motors has become the most established and recognizable Ford franchise in all of northeastern and central Pennsylvania. In 1915, Sunbury Motors had an inventory of around 10 vehicles. And today, there's over 500 to choose from. They had 2 employees then and almost 200 now. SMC continuously improves for you. Sunbury Motors has a complete service department with a separate diesel shop and quick lane for your convenience. A state-of-the-art body shop and frame and alignment shop, along with one of the largest Ford parts operations on the East Coast. In the past several years, Sunbury Motors has also added the full lineup of Lincoln and Hyundai vehicles. Everyone is welcome to become part of the SMC growing family. Sunbury Motors, in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza and at sunburymotors.com. Proudly owned by the Mertz family since 1915. Thanks, J.O.
You just don't think about insurance. You buy a home, you take out a policy, and you forget about it until something happens and you need it. Then you think about insurance a lot. My agent recommended insurance from Selective. Insurance for our home and property, jewelry, even the food in our refrigerator. Selective thinks about everything, so I don't have to.
Selective. Response is everything. Get to know us at Selective.com.
Get to know your local Selective agent, Pretty Insurance, on Market Street in Sunbury or at PrettyInsurance.com. Find out what Pretty Insurance can do for you.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to PurdyInsurance.com. They'll take care of all of your insurance needs. And you really want to be with a group that you just really trust and you're comfortable with. I just described Purdy Insurance in a nutshell. I'm in the Sunbury Motors studio, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors K Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf. It's been interesting listening to those talk about the life and times of Dean Smith and how often I could have taken and inserted the name Joe Paterno in there. So often, as to how he treated student athletes and what he meant, the impact on lives. Being smart, innovative, ahead of the game. I mean, you look at today's game, for example, instant replay, who advocated it? You look at college football playoff, who advocated it? 12th team in Big Ten, who openly advocated it? You know, and it, I mean, who advocated all those things? Who advocated, you know, strong graduation rates? And all those things about everything that innovative about and ahead of his time, Dean Smith. And time now to bring in my broadcast partner and also the Writing Hall of Famer in the U.S. Basketball Writers Association Hall of Fame from the Philadelphia Daily News, Dick Girardi. Dick, welcome. You spent a lot of time. You and I just went to Maryland. You spent a lot of time in Coalfield House when you were on that campus. And you saw a lot of ACC hoops, and that included several games with Dean Smith and North Carolina. How maddening was it for you, because he usually is the guy that won the game, and how much did you appreciate watching a maestro at work?
Yeah, I mean, we didn't get to see UCLA as often, Steve, back in the day, because you didn't get to see games all the time like we do now. So you'd see Coach Wooden's team occasionally, and obviously he's the best ever in college hoops. But I got to see North Carolina a lot in the 70s and into the 80s, and before I moved up to Philly. And the thing that's always fascinated me about Dean Smith's teams were how unique they were, how well prepared they were, and how good he was when the game started. I wrote today, and I believe it, he's the best in-game coach in college basketball history. I can't speak to other sports. I wouldn't attempt to compare other sports, but college basketball, I mean, I just never have seen anybody as good as he was at understanding and mastering every imaginable situation.
The importance, you've done, covered a lot of press conferences as well, and I was only around him three different times in my life. I mean, and it was always in a press conference situation. How important, give me the importance of actually listening to how he talked about, whether it was in-game or whatever, and what you could learn just from listening to him in a press conference.
Well, this is an interesting comparison everybody listening to your show will really appreciate. He reminded me in many ways of Coach Paterno, in that if you got him privately, and I didn't spend very much time with him, Steve, he would tell you a lot. And publicly, he wasn't going to share a lot of information. He was going to tell you what you needed to know, not necessarily, or what he needed you to know or wanted you to know, maybe not what you wanted. He would give you a little bit and pieces, but he wasn't going to tell you all the secrets. So that was a little, sometimes you thought, all right, what was this play? I remember being at the Meadowlands at a regional. How did you signal this play in? I said it to one of his players. He said, don't answer the question. he didn't want everybody to know some of the things, which reminded me of Joe in that way.
Right. Yet,
and I'm not saying in a bad way. It's just that just coaches are like that. They right. have information and they want their team to know about it. They don't want anybody else to know.
Exactly. I remember being at the 91 regional. This is just a small tidbit, but just the thought process. And you and I both know about, you know, look, it's hard to win six games in a row in the regular season, let alone try to win six games in a row when you're facing the best competition over a period of a couple of weeks. So someone asked about the enormity of the NCAA tournament. He says, look, can we just break it down into two-game segments like we do an in-season tournament? Let's win the Carrier Dome tournament. Let's win the Meadowlands tournament. His thought process, a bit different than everybody else that other people picked up on. Would that be fair?
Yep. No, I think he's way ahead of his time, and that's what I was trying to make the point today, is that he was doing things that are widely accepted today, and teams use it all the time, except he was doing it in the mid-60s, mid-70s, before anybody even thought about it. I didn't mention this in the story today, but you'll remember because you watched enough games. He had a team called the Blue Team, which he used to, it was five guys off the bench. He'd bring them in at one time for like a minute and a half,
right,
just to irritate the other team and give his starters a breather. So it's not unlike what Kentucky is doing today, except their blue team also has really got all Americans.
The four corners offense, well, in part because when others tried to use it, they didn't use it the same way Dean Smith did. He used it with Phil Ford in particular to near perfection. The shot clock today is an offshoot of others trying to use the four corners and kill the game. But that innovative, the way Phil Ford ran it and why it really was an offense and not a stall.
Yeah. Imagine four players literally standing in the four corners of the half court. Right, then imagine how big the court looks if there's just one player with the ball and one player trying to guard him. Right? There's a lot of open space. And you had a guy like Phil Ford, who was one of the great dribblers, one-on-one players in college basketball history. It was an offense almost impossible to stop. And what would happen is he beat his man, and whoever was guarding one of the men in the corner would come to help. Well, guess what? That man in the corner would follow the guy who was guarding him right to the rim, and Phil Ford went off 2-3 minutes at a time, and then you get frustrated, you foul Phil Ford. Certainly not one that mattered. But once they had the lead late in the game, they were almost impossible to beat.
You and I will go to Ohio State on Wednesday night. We will see Shannon Scott start for Ohio State. His father, Charlie Scott, of course, at North Carolina, I think brought more into focus now because of what, you know, of the Dean Smith passing. Can you put into words, though, the difficulty of that era and the strength of Dean Smith's personality to make sure that it not only happened, but it worked?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's one of his great legacies. Is that, look, he's coaching in North Carolina in the early 60s when everything's changing. The whole country's changing. There's sit-ins in Greensboro. There's Selma, the movie that's out now that's coming from the 50s. There's Dr. King's speech in D.C., all this stuff is happening, and North Carolina's a southern state, and there hadn't been any black athletes at North Carolina at all. He recruits Charlie Scott in the late 60s, and he was a great player. He's a great NBA player. People remember him, and that really, Dean Smith was already revered down there, and for him to say, hey, look, this is what we're doing, I think it helped with the public at large to be more accepting in society. Not that we're certainly not anywhere in a final place on that state, but we're better than we were.
Right.
And I think that was huge. And I think it was interesting. I mentioned it today. He was a Democrat in North Carolina. And people with long memories, and after the Civil War, there was a Republican president, Abraham Lincoln, of course, and the Republicans were looked at like sort of they were the liberals and the Democrats were the guys in the South. Well,
right.
That obviously has since changed, but Dean Smith was a Democrat in a Republican state for the last 30 years, but is still revered because of who he was, what he did, beyond just basketball. And the fact that he brought Charlie Scott in was, I think, opened up a ton of doors for Phil Ford and Michael Jordan and James Worthy and all the rest of the great athletes that played North Carolina.
I think people forget, though, when he took over North Carolina, he was elevated for being an assistant. Because he actually played for the legendary Fog Allen. at Kansas.
And
people forget that when he took over because of a scandal, and I think there was one player involved in a point shaving scandal. That was connected with North Carolina. The typical management overreaction is, let's de-emphasize the sport. That's the problem.
Yeah.
And he
took
over when the sport was de-emphasized, and I think that is something that people have not talked about much, Dick.
It's a great point. His first year, believe it or not, they only played 17 games. I was going to get into that in my column, but I just ran out of space. But they were 8-9. It was his own team's only losing record. He took over from Frank McGuire, who was a Hall of Fame coach, and it was the head coach on the famous 57 undefeated team that beat Wilt Chamberlain in the Triple OT in the NCAA championship game. So, yeah, Frank McGuire was forced out for the reason he was assistant and didn't have a lot of success early. And they wanted to, it was not unlike Mike Krzyzewski at Duke. They wanted to run him out of there. But they realized eventually that, you know, he might want to keep around for a while. So he stayed for 36 years and won almost 900 games. But, yeah, he did. He came in under bizarre circumstances back in 1961.
Everyone sees, of course, what Michael Jordan time looked, and you know, and you and I, as like we do on the broadcast, you and I just talk. But Jordan was a great defensive player, and is it a coincidence, Dick, that he created defense off of offense off of his defense, and is it a coincidence that in playing for Dean Smith that two championships the Bulls won were on passes from Jordan?
I think that's what he was taught. I mean, I think he came there and dunked on people, and he left there appreciating the fine points of the game. And I think that's what that was Dean Smith's greatest strength, is that everybody on his team had every skill. And certainly Jordan had those skills. And it's funny. I mean, I remember him in college, Steve, and everybody loved him. I mean, you loved watching him play because he was different, but I don't think anybody knew how great he was going to be when he got to the NBA, but the fundamentals were set at North Carolina, and then just the ability took over and the great will that he had. But, yeah, no, I don't think there's any question. The passes to Steve Kerr, I know John Paxson beat the Suns, but I think
Paxson and Kerr.
Gave Horace Grant, with Danny Ainge, went to double-team Horace Grant, left John Paxson open to knock my man Charles Barkley out of the finals. But yeah, now Jordan, he was the ultimate North Carolina player, and they just had so many great players. And I actually talked to a number of NBA scouts through the years. They said, look, we'd like a North Carolina player in a certain position. We add 10 spots to him because we know he's going to be better than we think he is.
Right. Something that has not been talked about that I've seen in the last 24 hours, I want to get into with you. If you're securing yourself, you do what's best for the other guy. Dean Smith, in the 70s, I remember Spencer Hayward, I think, was the one that challenged and won, that when guys came to him and talked to him about going early into the NBA draft, he had no problem giving them the right advice. If he thought it was right to go early, he told them, go.
Well, if you think about it, in the mid-80s, when that started to really become more popular, there weren't that many players leaving early. I'll give you, for instance, Lionel Simmons played 4 years.
Right.
Chris Leitner played 4 years. There's a lot of really great players that played 4 years of college, even into the 90s. So the fact that Jordan went, he left after his junior year, that Dean Smith, well, he just sacrificed a potential Southern National Championship. Tell this guy, hey, it's time to go. Sure. For a year before, another great example. Yeah, so he told those guys, he knew NBA people, and he said, look, this is crazy. This is, you're going to be a long-term professional player. You can always come back and finish your degree, but yeah, go. So, yeah, that tells you he was looking out for, and everybody that knows him always says that similar to Coach Paterno, he was, all right, what's best for my players? What can I do to help them in life? Because that's really bottom line of what a college coach is supposed to be about. And another great example is Pat Chambers and Tim Frazier talking all the time. And now that Tim's playing for the Sixers, Pat encouraging him, and they've probably been encouraging each other because of all the difficult games at Penn State has happened. That's really, that's what a good college coach is supposed to be. It's about not just about this team, but it's about what's going to happen to the kids' life.
Great coaching happens at all sorts of levels. We're discussing Dean Smith. Herb McGee found a spot in life where he could make an impact. He won his 1,000th game. Tell us a couple things about the Hall of Famer that the general fan would not know beyond the fact that he's won 1,000 games.
Yeah, he is a Philly guy through and through, Steve. He went to West Catholic High School, played on a great team with Jim Lynham and Jim Boyle, who were great players at St. Joe's in the 60s. And wanted to play at St. Joe's, wasn't recruited by Jack Ramsey, ended up going to a school called Philadelphia Textile in 1959, and never left. Played 4 years there, was an assistant coach for a couple of years, was named head coach, I think, in 1967, and is now 73. He's been a head coach the whole time and had opportunities to go to Division I schools as assistant, as head coach, and he decided, well, I'm comfortable. I like this. People like me. I enjoy this level of basketball. I'm making an impact on these kids' lives, and I'm having fun, and we're winning a few games. All right. You stay around, and all of a sudden you look up one day after 48 seasons, and you just win your 1,000th game. So it's some story, and Herb, as he tells me, has never missed a game or a practice going back to high school as a player or a coach. He says, I don't get sick. I don't think he's going to retire. So it's really a race between him and Mike Krzyzewski, two coaches the longest, who's going to end up with the most wins.
What's it like, Dick, when you're covering someone that you consider to be good people?
It makes it easier because you get access. It's fun going to a D2 game because you go over to Philadelphia, you're there a couple of hours before the game, you walk into the coach's office and you sit there. It isn't the same pressure. You're not walking into too many Division I coaches' offices. I've walked into a few that I know really well, but you know how tense it gets because winning and losing is sometimes it depends on whether you keep your job or not. Well, he doesn't have that issue. He's going to keep his job. So he just come in, he tells stories, and you listen, and you write a few things down. You look up, all of a sudden, you got a story, and they haven't even started the game yet.
Dick, thanks. You're the best. Appreciate so much the insight, as always, my friend.
You got it, pal. We'll see you Wednesday in Columbus.
Dick Girardi, my working partner for Penn State basketball. Dave Paulson, next half hour. Back with more in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK. So many things I heard about Dean Smith. Of course, you know, I was only around him or in the same room with him three different times, and it was always at press conferences or games. And, you know, listening to him was so important. Every time the NCAA tournament comes up, I always talk about Dean Smith's North Carolina approach to the tournament, taking it one regional at a time, instead of the enormity of winning six in a row. And I've quoted that many times because it was at a press conference I was at when he talked about it. And, you know, I've always known a lot about him. At the same time, when you hear things we're discussing, for example, guys going to the NBA early, being secure in yourself. Well, I mean, that's Joe Paterno in Penn State. What did, you know, North Carolina guys, you valued them for their tremendous work ethic and also for their fundamentals. Penn State players valued in the draft for tremendous work ethic and fundamentals. What would Joe do with a player at the end of his playing career? He would always try to put them in a position on the field that he thought was their step to the NFL, to give them their best chance to showcase it. He did that consistently. Players leaving early. Rules were a little different in football at the time than basketball, but Mike Munchak left with a year to go, strongly encouraged by his head coach. Todd Blackledge left with a year to go, strongly encouraged by his head coach. I mean, you don't think Todd Blackledge could have helped an 8-3-1 football team in 1983 maybe be 10-2, 11-1? Of course he could have. But Joe Paterno also knew what was best for Todd Blackledge. Penn State football was going to be just fine. Dean Smith did the same thing in North Carolina. Bob McAdoo was ready. Could he have helped North Carolina win more games the next year? Sure. But it was what was best for Bob McAdoo, the teacher of Joe Paterno, the teacher of Dean Smith, knew when it was right to go to the next level and was secure enough in themselves to say, you're ready, go to the next level, we'll be fine. A lot more to talk about on this. Dave Paulson, next half hour on Bucknell Basketball.